What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum. NeuroGum is a chewing gum. They've also got some mints. It's got caffeine, L-theanine, B vitamins 6 and 12. It just helps with energy, focus. I like to chew it really, you know, anytime. If I'm driving around showing houses, or if I'm going to a CrossFit workout, or before jiu-jitsu, or really when I'm podcasting. I mean, really, I consume it a lot. So it helps me, you know, from grabbing an extra energy drink or another cup of coffee. You know, if I just grab one of those, it doesn't make me super jittery. And yeah. So get out there, try some NeuroGum. All right, guys. Now we are, if y'all haven't noticed, we're in a little bit different of we're not in our typical studio. We're recording at Pat's house today because I'm having a baby tomorrow. So
yeah, Zach and Gina got a baby coming.
Well, I guess in 2 days. Yeah. So we're elsewhere today, but we've got an awesome guest here. He is a professional hockey player. He is a survivor of SJS-TEN, the world record holder for the fastest time across America on skates, the great and powerful Louis Shakes.
How's it going?
Welcome, sir.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for coming
absolutely,
on.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, Murph's talked you up, so don't disappoint.
I'm going to do my best. Hopefully I remember how to speak English. But
yeah. You've gotten better since the time that we podcasted together, so I have faith in you.
All right.
Have you French accent before?
Well, I spent a lot of time away from the U.S., so like usually when I come back the first couple weeks, you can hear it more.
Okay. Mm.
Thankfully, we speak. Even over there in France, when we play hockey, we speak English with the team and stuff, so that helps. But you pick up on everybody's habits and stuff. So the first couple of weeks, I'm looking for my words.
Yeah, we speak Hoosier French around here.
Yeah,
LeMay Fally.
Yeah, Graboy.
Yeah, Crève Coeur. I'm like, dude, not even close.
How are you supposed to say it?
Crève Coeur.
Gravois. Right, so we would say
Loughborough.
People around here would say like Chota, but Château.
Loughborough. Loughborough. I don't know. Yeah. I feel like that's a French sound.
If I see how it's written, I can tell you, but maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. But anyway, Louis, tell us a little bit about yourself, man.
Yeah. So I was born right outside of Paris. And then, you know, normal life growing up. I mean, my parents like separated and whatnot. But like, that's a pretty common thing, I feel like, in today's world. And then when I was 4 years old, I started playing hockey. One of my friends would play, and he was like, dude, Come try it out. You can get like a 3-day pass thing. Go try it out for 3 practices, see how you like it. And then I went there the first time and I spent more time on my ass on the ice than standing up trying to skate. And my mom was like, he's going to hate me taking him there. He's going to absolutely hate that. He's never going to want to go back. And I got off the ice and I looked at my mom and was like, this is exactly what I want to do in my life. Like, I want to be a hockey player. And I never stepped away from the ice until I had to. It was like against my own will. I became very sick, just like that. We always say that tomorrow is not promised, and it sounds super cliche, but I went to school one day, had flu-like symptoms. I was really red, and everybody was coming up to me like, are you okay? Are you tired? Like, what's wrong? You seem sick. I was 6 years old. And I was confused because I was tired, but I was okay. I mean, and so I got home that night, and my mom was like, Louis, you want to go to hockey practice? And I told her no. And that's when she knew something was wrong, because in my whole life, that's the only hockey practice I've purposely missed. Like, unless I was hurt and I couldn't physically play, like, I've never missed a hockey practice. And so she was like, okay, that's weird. We stayed at home, watched TV, and then I started being super itchy, like head to toes. I was just losing it. And my mom's a nurse, so she was kind of freaking out. She's like, stop, what are you doing? Stop. And I was like, mom, I can't. So she took me to the ER that night, and they didn't find anything. So I went back home, she slept next to me, and then I woke up the next morning and had blisters all over my body, head to toes, just covered in blisters. So I immediately hospitalized. They don't know what's happening because it's really rare. And then these blisters would eventually pop and my skin would fall. So I went from being a normal kid in school to being hospitalized with no more skin on my body, head to toes. and my organs burning at the same time. So I was burnt to the second degree on over 80% of my body while my organs were also burning. So it was burning inside out, essentially. And this is usually caused by an allergic reaction to medication. But in my case, they never found out what caused it because they did the testing too late. So I was in that first hospital and they didn't know what was going on. And then ultimately, I had to get airlifted to the burn unit in Paris. They didn't even tell my parents about it. They just like put me in a helicopter. And then my mom just woke up in the middle of the night like, what's happening? And she got there and they were loading me up in the helicopter. So she jumped on there. They wouldn't even let her. She was like, I'm going.
Right.
Got to Paris. They knew what the disease was, but there's no cure for it. I mean, it was just pain management. And yeah, from there, I mean, we can get into details after, but like I had a near-death experience. Doctor told me I was going to die.
And you're 6 years old.
6 years old. And then, yeah, I mean, we'll get into details, but essentially somehow survived. We don't know how or why, like especially the way I did it. Like, I don't have any secondary effects from it. You know, a lot of people.
So was this just like a one-time, like it is this was like, so you have all these blisters all over your body, you get airlifted to Paris and then like just recover from there. Like it eventually it stops or.
Yeah. So I guess for me, things had to get worse before they got better. Okay. So it's usually how life works. So.
Yeah.
But for me, I got there. And then my health was decreasing. And then one day I was just in bed and I had my eyes closed and it was like, the doctor walks in my room. I hear him. My mom's in the room and he's like, ma'am, if he's not better by tonight, he'll be dead tomorrow morning. Have a great one. And he walks out.
That's it. I'm just cut and dry like that.
Yeah. So I was like,
no bedside.
I hear my mom starts crying and I'm like, mom, like he doesn't get to say what I do. I'm going to be okay. I'm gonna play hockey in North America one day. Like, and the blessing in all that was that I didn't really understand what dying was like what it meant. You know what death is, but you don't really understand when you're 6 years old. Like, what does that mean? And that was a blessing. But in that moment, my body had given up on me. I was dead. And it sounds cliche again, but it's all mental at this point. And I remember telling myself, I am so tired of fighting this hard. I'm just gonna relax for a second. As soon as I did that, my body became super heavy. And then I felt my soul getting like physically removed from my body. Like, and I was going up in the sky and I remember looking up and seeing my face in a pink cloud until I became my own face looking down at the world. And I was like, huh, why are they so stressed and running around down there? And why are they so sad that I'm up here? And then it's like I fell back and I was like, whoa, I'm still here. I guess I'm good. And so, yeah, from there, things started getting better. Like, we don't know how and why. The recovery process was really long. I was told I could walk again. I was supposed to be blind. I was supposed to have all these issues. Like, there's a lot of dental problems. People have their eyelashes growing to their eyes because it's so burnt down. They're like,
yeah, they have nowhere else to go.
And people have flare-ups and everything. And so, for me, like, I didn't deal with any of that. I just couldn't go in the sun for, like, about 2 years. So, I could go outside, but I had to be fully covered at all times. And then now I have two scars, one here, one there, and then one on each of my shins. But that's it.
Really?
So, I'm like...
I was going to say, did you need any skin? You said your skin was burned. Did you need skin grafts or anything like
that? I didn't need any skin grafts. I know some people do receive some, but the blessing was that my parents were... in a financial position to afford all the treatments and all like the skincare, because French healthcare system is great. Like, you don't really have to pay for anything ever. But when it comes to skin, it's considered cosmetics. So because they're like, well, it's just for the way you look, it doesn't need to be reimbursed. So like somebody who doesn't have the funds for that.
Yeah.
And who doesn't have like the ability for like one of your parents to take off work or something, like I would have never recovered the way I did. I'd probably be blind. I'd probably like have so much more scars. And yeah, I mean, my parents were taking care of me every single day. And I always say this, like the family aspect of things through this process was huge. Like, had I not had my family, I wouldn't be alive. And I truly believe that. And yeah, things got better, was able to get back on the ice. I had to build myself back mentally. You know, I saw a therapist. Because, I mean, you're 6 years old. You're they wouldn't even let me see myself in the mirror because how destroyed I was, because they knew that it would kill me if I saw how bad it was. And then, yeah, just had to really just build myself up. I was very sensitive. Like, you could tell me, oh, it's raining outside, and I'd start crying. So I really had to, like, work on that, and took a long time, but it was fine. I was just excited to be alive, honestly. And so as much as that was a really hard experience, I would never trade it for anything, because it shaped me into who I am. And I was like, well, if I can survive this, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And so when I was 11, I kept playing hockey, and then I was able to pick up hockey again. My dad actually brought me my very first hockey bag when I was in hospital. The very first hockey equipment that I owned, my dad brought it to me, and he was like, hey, like, this is for when you get out. And that also helped me with my mindset of, like, looking forward to something. So played hockey till I was 11 at the first team I started with. And I moved away 3 hours from home to be in a more competitive program. Stayed there for 2 years, you know, taking the train back home alone every weekend when I could and didn't have games and stuff. Eventually, my parents found a job in that city. And a year later, I moved on my own to Canada. I was in Quebec City for 2 years.
And how old are you?
I was 14 when I moved across the world.
Okay.
Yeah. My family stayed back. And then lots of crazy challenges again happening, you know, being from France.
Now, did you speak English at this point?
No.
No.
So my first 2 years, I mean, I took it in school. My first 2 years in Quebec were in French. And then I moved to Toronto. I was 17. And I was good in school. But then when you get there, you understand people, but you don't have any vocabulary to answer back. Like, how do you say spatula? How do you say, like, things for, like, your daily life?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I have two options right now. Either don't speak to anyone and I don't look like an idiot, or I make mistakes, but I learn and I can actually, like, connect with people. And so the route I chose, and took me 2 months, and I was able to have, like, full-blown conversations with people. It's the best way to learn a language, honestly. Just move somewhere.
Just go there. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I've noticed that. I mean, a couple times that I've been out of the country, I mean, I can speak decent Spanish because I worked in restaurants for, like, 10 years, and I worked with a ton of people from the Latino community. So, like, I learned how to speak enough to communicate with them, but, like, I haven't used it in years. But then when we went back to Mexico, I was there for, like, a week on vacation, and, like, was able to speak a little bit, you know, because you're just, if you're not around it, it's like one of those things, if you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
like you were just saying, I don't even know if we had started recording yet, but you were like, oh, you know, it takes me a while to, when I come back to America, to, like, act.
Absolutely. Yeah. It doesn't, it takes me a while to, like, get back to a level I know I can have.
Right.
Like, I can still speak and all that. It's just, like, it's not as instinctive anymore. I'm, like, looking for my words and trying to put it together. But, so yeah, moved to Toronto for hockey after that. Then El Paso, Texas, which was a crazy, like, cultural shock.
I'm sure.
Going from Canada to Texas.
El Paso, I mean, Texas.
Anything like Texas in France?
Oh, no.
Like, landscape?
Like, I saw my first gun when I was over there. I was, like, 19, 18, 19, you know?
They have Canadian cowboys.
I haven't seen them. Actually, in Ontario, they do have some farm boys that are, like, yeah.
But I wonder if it sounds like a kind of like what we consider like a Western.
Have you ever seen Letterkenny?
Yeah, I was gonna
say. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. In Ontario, that's what it was. But yeah, well, I saw some real cowboys in Texas. I was like, holy shit. Like, all these crazy stories. I mean, once I was driving, and this guy, there's two cars in front of me at the red light. And the guy in the first car gets out, starts messing on his car, whatever, and the light turns green. So I'm about to honk. But the car in front of me did it, so I didn't have to. So I was like, okay. The guy that was out of his car, like, turns around, shows his gun, and he's like, shh. And I'm literally like this. I'm like, okay, pal, take your time,
take your time, dude. Yeah.
I was like, that's all right. But yeah, like, it was just crazy. Shot my first guns when I was over there. That was cool. And then our rink was a rodeo center. So in the summer, they turned into a rodeo center, and then the rink was also on the border with Juarez in Mexico.
Yeah.
And that's when Trump was elected, and all these big, like, I don't know. It was a really cool experience, honestly. And then moved to Boston, did 1 year junior hockey there, got recruited to play NCAA D3. Then after 2 years, transferred schools to Missouri State after being stuck in France for 8 months during COVID. And then, yeah, decided to, when I got to Missouri State, it was a really good point in my life. But I was feeling a lot of survivor's guilt. I was like, you know, it's crazy. I get to live this life.
What survivor's guilt?
Yeah. So survivor's guilt would be like, I was at this really good point in my life and I was very happy. I was very fulfilled. But at the same time, I felt very guilty because why did I survive?
Survive
the disease.
The disease when you were a kid.
Why?
But now, have you had like flare ups since, or is it kind of been just, it was kind of that one time when you were six, or is it something that keeps
flaring up? I haven't really experienced any of that yet, knock on wood. But it's the scary thing for me is like, we don't know if it could come back. It's a possibility, but since we don't know what caused it, I don't take any medication or anything. So as a professional athlete, you know, especially playing hockey, it's not like I'm playing darts.
Right.
I can't take any anti-inflammatory medicine or any of that. Like, the furthest I'll go is Tylenol. Or morphine, but like I don't take morphine on the daily.
Right. You know?
So
right.
It's like an extreme case. But just trying to navigate that. You have like sometimes I have had like couple like flare ups, I would say, here, and it's like it's very scary because you get like the PTSD from it and you're like,
fuck, is it happening
again? And then like you over focus on it.
And I feel like when you think about things they get worse.
It's even
and
worse.
Shit. Yeah.
So I do a good job now detaching from it and just like, yeah. Oh, it's fine, you know. But so yeah, I felt really like I felt uncomfortable living the life that I lived and being like, you know, I get to travel and chase my dreams and I'm healthy. Like I, through this whole process, I met survivors from the disease that can't even put shoes on because every time they step, the skin peels off under their feet.
Oh wow.
And here I am just training,
playing
8 hours a day,
hockey.
Playing hockey, like what?
Yeah.
And there's no, they haven't found a cure or anything.
They're finding things now slowly. But again, like the year I got it in France, only 3 people out of 67 million were diagnosed with the disease to the extent that I had it. In the US, it's more common because the use of medication is way more present. You know, like it's very common. You walk into somebody's home and there's a whole like medicine basket.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or in France, like.
That doesn't happen. Yeah, you open people's,
it happens,
you open people's
like
cupboards and they've got a small pharmacy in there.
First thing they do is pop pills in the morning. I'm like, how about you go for a walk, drink some water,
yeah,
and
get
some
sunlight.
Fruits and veggies,
like,
get some sun.
My ex-wife is Bosnian, so like their medicine cabinet is rakia.
Yeah, yeah. Literally.
That's it. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, well, we're one of 2 countries in the whole world that can advertise our pharmaceuticals on television.
Mm-hmm.
Us and like New Zealand, and New Zealand's like very limited on what they can do. Whereas, you know, you watch any of our TV, which I don't really watch any, like, you know, everything I watch is streaming, but you know, put on any sort of news station, you know, like 7 out of 10 of the commercials are going to be some sort of pharmaceutical.
And it's next to impossible to sue them if anything goes wrong, but that's a story for another day.
Right. Yeah.
Even like doctors can have like billboards.
Yeah.
My dad's a chronic pain surgeon and he's like, look at this guy.
Yeah. Look at this asshole. Put his face on
he's
a billboard.
Like, so yeah, and then one day, when I got to Missouri State, the boys had this little tradition they would do is they would go skate around campus, like the Mighty Ducks.
Oh yeah, cool.
And I was like, dude, this is the coolest thing. So they let me borrow a pair, and then ultimately I bought a pair of Mars Blades, you know?
Yeah.
And I was just ripping around campus every day, like a couple miles. And that was with my roommate, Garrett, who's also one of my teammates at the time. And I'm skating, and I just look over at him. I'm like, dude, it'd be absolutely nuts to skate across America.
Fuck yeah.
And he looks at me, he's like, yeah, it'd be sick. Can't do that. Like, I'm like, okay. So sure. I got home, I'm in the shower. I'm like, can't get this thought out of my brain. I'm like, I have to do this, but I can't do it just to look at me. I'm skating across the country.
Yeah.
Like, I need to find a purpose for it. And then I always say this, as human beings, we tend to normalize the things we accomplish and the things we go through because it's our story. That's what we know. And so for me, the disease I survived was very normal. But then again, I'm like, wait a minute, it's pretty significant what you went through and you've never really been involved. You've never, you know, given back to this community, and you can do this to raise funds and awareness, but also give hope to people that things can get better, whether they're in the disease that you had or like some other field, you know? And I was like, whoa, you're really onto something there. And so I contacted the foundation for the disease, and for 3 weeks, nobody was answering me. I'm like, maybe I'm not supposed to do that, until one morning somebody answered. It was my last attempt to call.
So you're just keeping a call on
them? I called them once a day, every day, for 3 weeks. And it was a Friday morning. I was walking to my 9 a.m. class. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try one more time. If nobody answers, I'm not doing it now. Maybe later, but not now. And I call and it beeps and beeps. And then somebody picks up and I'm like, oh.
Yeah. I don't even know what I'm saying. Yeah.
And I was like, hi, my name is Louis Shakes. And I'm going to skate across America to raise funds and awareness for the disease. Who can I talk to? This lady put me in touch with the biggest researcher for the field, in the field of the disease at Vanderbilt University, Dr. Phillips. The very next day I was on a Zoom call with her and she was actually the first person I got to speak to about my, like my
experience
with it. Yeah. Cause she was the first specialist who like, I could understand, you know, what I went through. And I told her and she's like, yeah, I'm on board. I'm with you. And then one of my buddies invited me on his podcast. Danny was my trainer for hockey and we were talking about
Dan Sullivan.
No. Okay. Dan Canary.
Sorry.
But Dan Sullivan was also one of my good buddies. And so we talked about everything and he was the only person who knew I had this idea. Cause in the beginning, I just wanted to hear positive feedback. I didn't want to hear like, ah, you're crazy. Cause I knew I was crazy already. Like I don't.
Yeah.
Sick. You don't need to tell me.
You're French. I mean,
exactly. Right. And so, but he knew that I'm the kind of person, like if I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. Like it doesn't matter what it is. Once it's out there and I said it, I have to do it. So at the end of the episode, he's on Zoom and he starts smiling. He's like, hey, dude, you're preparing something pretty crazy. You want to talk about that? And I look at him. Here we go. And I was like, yeah, my name's Louis Shakes. I'm going to skate across America for this reason. And then from there, 3 weeks later, one of my friends calls me and she's like, hey, Louis, like, I had no idea you went through this. I had no idea. You don't talk about it. And what you want to do is pretty amazing. I can help you. And it's my friend Melanie. And I was like, well, you can help me for sure. But like,
yeah,
what are you going to do? It's so early in the process of things. Like, what could you possibly do? And turns out she put me in touch with their best friend's brother, who's a producer in LA for movies. And then same thing, called this guy, called him until the day he picked up the phone. I woke him up. He was on the West Coast in LA and he was like way too early for me to be calling him, but I didn't realize.
Yeah.
And
the time difference.
I was like, whatever it is I need to do to work with you, tell me, but I will do it. And so he didn't really understand what I wanted to do and why. So he's like, put together a video that explains what you want to do, who you are, and like, what's your plan? So I found a videographer on campus. We filmed all that, sent it to him, and then he was like, shit, like this guy's legit. He's serious. And from there, he's like, okay, I'm in.
That's awesome.
And then we built that team together, looking for sponsors. For
yeah,
money.
So what's the team look like?
So we have two producers.
And training. What's the training like?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the training, I want to hear it all.
It was crazy. So the team was composed of me, a videographer. There was my trainer, Dan, my little brother, Matisse. He came in on the journey, filled in Dan's spot when Dan had to go. And then we had, I said two producers, right? Jennifer and Ryan. And then we also had people come in and out the journey, you know, to help out. And so for me, the thing was I had no experience in business. I had no experience in marketing. I had no experience in communication. Like I was just starting. I was like, let's do this.
Yeah.
So. I, because the thing is to skate across America, like there's not one route.
That was going to be one of my first questions. Many, like how do you plan that? Like, is it?
I figured out my starting point. I thought Venice Beach Skate Park was a cool spot to start. And I was like, I want to go all the way to New York. And I was like, Times Square is pretty significant. I couldn't tell you why I chose these two spots, but it just came
to me. Yeah, they seem like so, the
cultural epicenters of each coast. Yeah.
It's America for French people.
Right.
Times Square. And
Venice Beach. Yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
You're not going to St. Louis? Damn, bro.
Well, I did go through St. Louis, but.
Yeah, you don't think of it as a cultural epicenter? Yeah.
Oh,
man.
Wait, we're the belly button, baby.
Yeah, toast ravioli deserves better than that, bro.
And so, yeah, I just had to like go very small. So I always say this, when you have a big goal, you have to break it down to like the tiniest piece because I didn't have that many references, you know. It's not like I wanted to run a marathon. Uh-huh, I could call anyone to, not anyone, but like I could call a bunch of people right now.
On,
like,
on how do I train for a marathon? Yeah. You could Google that and I could mm-hmm. get 30 different, a million different answers.
So I guess the trick for me was to figure out the small pieces and like be really patient. It took me 2 years to plan this and then build that team and then one thing I would do is walk into every single store I thought could be a good resource for my journey that aligned with what I was trying to do. And I was like, hey, kind of like a Karen would do, I want to speak to the manager.
Yeah.
My name's Louis. This is my story. This is what I want to do. Is there any way you guys can help with anything? Oh, the manager is not here. Can I get the business card so I can send an email? And I'm not even kidding. I have a shoebox full of business cards from like people I physically talk to. And it's the best way to do things because
word of mouth.
People always think like, oh, it's through social media. People are going to like hit you up. And no, you got to create these opportunities. And when you lean in and actually converse with people, you're like, whoa.
Is that how you got connected with First Form?
First Form is a whole other level. And a lot of, I guess when I became a First Form athlete, people asked me, were you surprised? And I was considering my situation, but at the same time, I just knew it was only a matter of time because the amount of times I would go on their website, read the core values, I'm like, yeah, well, this is who I am. Like this, I lived like this. And so when I found out about First Form, I was in Springfield and I was looking for supplements. And I went without knowing to the very first supplement superstore that Andy started.
Where my journey started too, by the way.
It's crazy. Yeah. This place is magical, bro. I don't know. I get chills thinking about it.
Missouri.
And so get my protein. This guy's telling me all about it. My first protein tub was CTC. I was fired up. Yeah. I get home. And I get on the website and I see like First Form athletes. And it was right at the time where I had the idea to start my journey. Literally like the same day. And I skated to that store. I went in with my rollerblades.
That's hilarious.
And I'm like, okay. And so I signed up online, put my email in there, whatever. And I get an email, automated email from Carter Klein. But I didn't realize it was an automated email. I just answered it. I was like, hey, like, this is sick. How do I like make this happen? This is what I want to do. And he answers me back. Like Cody Klein answered me. He's like, hey, you know, just apply online, do this, do that. For 2 years, I tried to become an athlete. Like before my journey started, I was like, every day, like, what can I do today to make them like see my vision and understand it? That it's so much more than just me skating across the country. It's me like bringing light to something bigger than myself, being a part of something greater than myself. And so just people ask me how I did it. And I don't have an answer because I just existed through that. Like I just, you know, I was just myself. And the amount of no's I was told, like we talk about it. I'm at HQ every day right now.
Yeah.
And just talked with Nick T last week. And he's like, dude, remember when you like you'd call me and I'd tell you like this was probably not going to work. And I was telling you no. And like just never took no for an answer. And like I laugh about it now. And I'm like, well, fuck you, Nick. Yeah. Sorry, bro. But like, we made it work.
And your calves are small. And you ain't juicy.
My calves are massive, bro. Just skate 3,000 miles. You'll get there. No, but like. It was cool because every time somebody would tell me no or redirect me, I would connect with somebody else. And then I created lifelong lasting friendships.
Sure.
I can confidently say that all my best friends, all my closest friends are here in St. Louis.
You controlled the story that was told about you, which if you work for those companies, that's a big piece of what you learned, especially under Andy's tutelage. And it's just like, it's funny because I hit you up because JT had started doing his Oregon Trail where he was running that half marathon a month. You and I didn't even know each other yet. I'm like, this motherfucker skated across America. He's going to help us out.
Yeah.
And this is like right before I left First Form.
Yeah.
And we just developed a friend, but there was a conversation that was had around
you.
And also I knew Dan Sullivan really well and he just talked the shit out of you. So I was like, I'm going to make friends with this guy.
But it was cool because even with Dan, I met him and then I met him through Missouri State hockey and then he used to play there. Connected with him on Instagram and then I was in St. Louis. And at the time, I had no idea how First Form worked. And I was like, dude, I'm in St. Louis. I am coming to see First Form today.
Mm-hmm.
And
that doesn't really work like that.
But it put them in a tough spot. But him and Colin Stark gave me a tour anyways. I met Andy. Now, Andy and I share something is that we both have scars on our face. And I'll always remember this. I'm turning the corner right by the gym entry and I see Andy walk by and I'm like, oh shit, here we go. He is terrifying. I'm like, here we go. And then he puts his hand out to say hi to me. And I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah, you're a real person.
Oh,
what do I do?
And he was so nice.
Yeah.
And like for a second, I was like, wait, you're actually really nice. Yeah. You're not as scary as you seem to be. And like, you actually care. And he's like, what are you guys doing? These are sick rollerblades. I was holding my rollerblades out of my 75 hard book that he signed. I have in my room and I take it everywhere I go with me, like everywhere. And I got to tell him like what I wanted to do. He's like, dude, that's fucking sick. And I was like, you know, Andy, you helped me deal with these scars. He's like, what do you mean? Like, well, I have scars just like you. And understanding that this is a strength that I can turn into a strength and something to set me, you know, apart from everybody else, then yeah, it really hit me. And he was like, dude, thank you. So, then worked out and then started making friendships. And then it was getting more and more serious. And then my training started because the issue was I was still playing hockey and I wanted to play hockey professionally. So I had to delay as much as possible my training for this endurance feat. But I was still in season and I was about to play nationals and all that. So we had to wait. And
where were you playing at the time?
Most State.
Yeah. Okay.
These 2 years I was at Most State. And so when I started training for this, I had to train 8 hours a day for the journey itself. I had to go to hockey practice. I had to go to school. And I was also doing some like construction work on the
side. For money.
Well, yeah.
How did you get?
I don't know if we can talk about that, but I mean, yeah, I was
for sure
because you know we can't. I can't legally work in the U.S. on a student visa.
Got it.
So it's tough.
Yeah, it's tough, I would imagine. You know?
And so, for a year and a half, when I decided to do this thing, I committed to sleeping 2 hours a night because there's only 24 hours in a day. So when I hear people tell me they want to make things happen. But then you really look at it and you're like, well, you're cutting all these corners. Like,
right, you're spending a third.
I was so broke. Like, there's weeks I was training 8 hours a day on top of playing hockey games and hockey practices. I had no food in my fridge for like 13 days. I'd eat like one like frozen waffle a day. That's all I had. And then you hear people like, I don't feel like doing it. I'm like, you just don't want to do it. It's fine.
You don't want to.
No. Yeah.
It's fine. It's okay. It's not for everyone. Like, but sometimes you gotta be honest with yourself. And for me, I'll always remember this, my first training session. So my training consisted of 2.5 hours of lifting, really high volume.
Like high rep.
High rep, many, many sets. And then 2.5 hours of lifting. I would have 2 hours of swimming, 2 hours of bike, 2 hours of run with different tempos, obviously. And it was like, I get in the pool for my very first swimming workout and I go down the pool once and I literally like freaked out. I was like, what is going on? I don't know how to do it. I mean, I can swim, but I can't swim like an athlete. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I was out of breath. And I had this thought, I'm like, well, you can either be a little bitch right now and like quit because it hasn't started. And you're like, okay, whatever. Or you stick with it. And then I started doing two and then three, four. And at the end of my training, I could swim for 3 hours nonstop without taking a water break or anything. And the cool thing was I was really scared of training for this because I'm like, I'm going to look like this. I'm going to look like a marathon runner. Right. I'm going to be super tiny. And I actually was the strongest I'd ever been. And it was the coolest thing because I could do whatever I wanted and then be like, I can go run a half marathon right now and then I can go lift and I can go do this and then do it again tomorrow. It's no problem.
I'm an athlete.
I was so strong. It was insane. Awesome. And started my journey, I was like 207 pounds, like 7% body fat. Like I don't know. I finished the journey 45 days later. I was 178 pounds. Oh, I was burning 8,000 to 12,000 calories a day. And then what people don't realize that I only ate my meal prep for like a week until I realized it wasn't working. And I can say that I skated across America eating fast food.
Okay.
Just fast food and protein shakes and electrolytes and those little gel packets that you take.
I mean, if you're burning that many calories, yeah. Mikey Musumishi eats that one meal a day and it's huge. It's all carbs and fats. He gets protein, but it's right. Like, mm-hmm. Do you see how lean and shredded that motherfucker is?
Yeah, it didn't matter what it was. I just need the calories. And getting 8,000 calories worth of chicken and broccoli versus like
right.
two Big Macs, a hot dog, and a milkshake. Like,
well, you think about how much
that tastes better, didn't it?
Well, yeah.
But what was wild is I didn't have any like inflammation, like stomach issues, nothing.
Yeah, but all the inflammation in your body was everywhere at that point.
I mean, the inflammation in my body was like...
It didn't matter if it was your gut, bro. Your whole body was torn the fuck up.
Dude, my pinky toe was probably like this big. I didn't lose any toenails, which is wild. I was so committed to this journey that I was willing to get my toenails surgically removed beforehand because I was like, that way it won't slow me down. Don't
worry about it.
Yeah.
On the third day, I remember I had blisters. They were like this big. I'm like, great. I'm not even out of California and I have blisters like this size of a hockey puck. And switched my skates over.
I was going to say, did you wear the same pair of skates the whole time? Or
well, like after I had that change, I did.
Only two pairs of skates.
I had a ton. Like Rollerblade hooked me up. Like they gave me so much equipment. It was insane. But at some point, my feet were so sensitive and so beat that there's no way I could break in a new pair, or like my skates broke multiple times and I couldn't do anything, but I had to like keep going with them. And it was crazy. I mean, you know, you prepare for this journey and you try and replicate as much as possible the environment you're going to be in. And then on day one, I get skating and I'm like, oh, this is not what I imagined at all. And each day was a journey itself.
Or like, I mean, I'm sure like across America, I believe it. Like, I mean, I'm sure it's not just smooth concrete the whole time. I'm sure you're rolling over some bumpy gravel or some bumpy like asphalt and some, you know, did you like kind of pick your route for the roads or like how?
So we had an idea on what cities we wanted to go through.
Okay.
At first I went to go through Colorado because I was like, as challenging as it's going to be beautiful. But then we ended up going the southern route. And in the beginning of the journey, we didn't want to go too fast, too early, because we're like, what if you burn yourself down? Like if you wore yourself out too quick, like we can't do that. So my goal was like 55 miles a day for the first like 10 days. And so the thing was to get out of California at that time because I waited the end of my hockey season. So I started June 1st, 2022.
Oh, gosh.
Fuck, dude.
So I'm in the desert. It's 116 degrees outside on the pavement. I can feel the pavement just melt under my skates when I'm pushing on my feet. I'm getting delirious in the heat. Like I'm imagining getting hit by a semi truck when there's nobody around me. Like, and at this point, I'm like, okay, you're not feeling too good right now.
Yeah.
But I just kept going. And then on day 12, I had my first fall. I was in Flagstaff, Arizona, and I was feeling good. You know, I'm just like skating, cruising, like being cocky and stuff. I'm like, let's go. And then my skate gets stuck in a crack, you know, on the sidewalk.
Uh-huh.
And dude, I just slid on concrete for like 30 feet, going 40 miles an hour. Like, my left leg looked like shredded ground beef. And I ended up in the ditch, and I'm like, okay, well, are my tattoos all right?
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, we're good. Did I break anything? Okay, no. Okay, I can get up now. So meet my crew, and I have like blood everywhere. They'll freak out. And then I'm eating a cheeseburger, McDonald's, fire. Fire. And my buddy, Dan, my trainer, was like, Louie, you know, like it's pretty cool what you're doing. I want you to finish it. Maybe you should slow down and like take a day off or something. You know, you're not doing it for the world record and like you should just take a day off. I looked at him. I got up, didn't say anything, put my skates on and I started skating again. And that day was the first time I skated this much distance. I skated 91.2 miles that day.
Fuck.
Because I had that chip on my shoulder. I was so pissed off that I fell down. I was so pissed off that my buddy said that. I was so frustrated that like my leg was in pain. I was like, okay, you know what, like fuck this. And we sent it over 90 miles that day. My brother was on the bike. He was not trained for this. He did 60 miles on the bike next to me.
Yeah,
there's this giant forest fire that like followed me for 150 miles, the smoke in the air. It was behind me.
Whoa.
I'm sure that made it tough to breathe and all that too.
Well, I had to hurry up because it was catching up to me and I had to go because like I'm telling you, for like 3-4 days, I could see the smoke above my head. And I'm like, yeah, I don't really need to make it harder on myself than it already is. And then after skating this much distance in one day, I was like, well, you know what? Like, I got this. I train. And that's where we tend to protect ourselves so much as human beings. It's like, what if I get hurt? What if you don't?
Right. People always look for, you know, what can go wrong. It's like, of course, there's always things that can go wrong. But man, like...
what can go right.
Yeah, you gotta be able to risk it.
Yeah,
you
know? And so it was cool for me to understand that there's what I know I can do, what I think I can do, what I think is my limit, and what's above that. And once you just scratch the surface of what you think your limit is, there's a whole other, you got to get there. And you got to stay there before you can even look further down. And so,
well, I mean, what is that? The David Goggins talks about the 40% rule. When you feel like you're done and out, you still have 40% left in the tank to get.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. And that's exactly what it was for me. I was like, whoa, I just skated 91 miles and I got my skids in the exam. I was like, I feel good. And then all of a sudden my mileage started increasing. I went from skating 55 to 75 to 85, 95, 150. The last 3 days of my journey, I almost skated over 500 miles without sleeping.
Oh shit.
2.5 days of just going. I skated through the night twice and then arrived in Times Square. And it was That's crazy so cool. because I was beat. I was tired, of course, but there's a point where
days?
it's 2,902.41 miles. The elevation I faced was 132,000 feet, which is like 4.5 times Mount Everest.
Holy shit.
That's insane.
And going up was one thing, but going down was way worse. People are like, oh, you could just chill going down.
Yeah, but
like,
no, you're like, no, you got to be high alert.
You
got to
be super alert.
Ass.
And then you got to contract every single, like you get in a ski position and then you go downhill. Like the top speed I reached was 67 miles an hour. On wheels this big shit. With a helmet. Like, that's it. So if you fall, you're done. Yeah. I was passing cars. I got hit by a car. Everything happened.
You got hit by a car?
Yeah. In Indianapolis, this guy just
T-boned
the red. Yeah. I was coming through an intersection, and he was at the red light waiting to turn right on red. And he's like, go, go. I'm like, well, I know I can go. I have the green light. That's weird. Yeah. And I get there. And as soon as I get in front, he like starts driving. So I jumped up. And I ended on the hood of his car, bounced off. And who did adrenaline? I got up. I'm like, what the fuck are you doing?
Yeah.
And this guy just like looks at me, starts screaming at me in Spanish. And then I was like, well, I have two options. I can lay there and play dead and call an ambulance and the cops. Because, I mean, what if there's internal bleeding or something? I don't know. I mean, my body's already so beat up. But I'm like, well, if I do that, my journey is like compromised. Like, yeah. I might not be able to finish. I was like,
Yeah, see you, dude.
So I was like, go before I fucking lose my mind. And then I got up and kept skating. Met my crew and they're like, you all right? I was like, yeah, I just got hit by a car.
pulled are they like following you the whole time? Or
yes,
how does that go?
That's a great question. So we had a support van that would go between 10 to 30 miles ahead of me, depending on the conditions and the time it would take me. And so they would scout the area and then I would meet them, have my little lawn chair. Take protein shakes, whatever. And so every time they'd wait for me. So whether it was taking me 20 minutes or an hour and a half, 3 hours, like they would park, stop, go. And then we had an RV who would meet me halfway through the day. Meet me halfway through the day where I would have lunch, take a nap, rest a little bit. And then the RV would go to our endpoint. And so we had an idea on what cities we wanted to go through. But every day we mapped it out one day at a time. We're like, okay, every day we had to fixate a goal on, okay, how many miles can you skate tomorrow? The weather is like this, this and that, how many? And then I would meet that goal and it would be like, okay, do you feel like you can keep going? But you had to be smart because it's like, if I push 130 miles one day, maybe the next day I can only skate 40 because I'm going to be gassed. And you don't want that. So we always had to be strategic, but then we also had such a small budget that my producer literally after day six was like, Louis, this is going way slower than what we need it to be. And if you don't start skating faster, we will not have enough money to take you to New York. Like you can keep going, but like we will not be able to be there because we have a whole team to feed. Like, And that's when I was like, shit. Okay. I was like, all right. But we all understood in that moment that we were doing a good job, but that was good. That wasn't good enough. We needed to like really come together. And the second I felt like my team believed in me being able to skate more every day is when I really realized that, damn, I can do this. And so, we all kind of got together in a sense and everything just started going right.
It's incredible. So was the world record, was that like the goal the whole time, or was that just happened?
It happened.
Are you the first person to do it, or has there been other people?
The route I did, yes.
Okay.
I know about two other people who've done something similar. One of them is Casey Cleveland. I talked to her when I was preparing the journey, and she wanted to help me out, like break her record. But she did a very different route. She went from San Diego to Florida. And so it's a lot less elevation.
A lot hotter, probably, depending on the time of the year.
Well, I mean, a lot hotter. Well, we didn't do it at the same time of the year. Oh. That was the one thing. And also, like, a lot hotter, I don't know, because I went through California, Arizona.
In the middle of the fucking summer.
New Mexico, yeah, so Texas, Oklahoma, Missouri. When there was that giant, in 2022, when there was, like, this really big heat wave that was super humid. I was out there through Fenton and stuff.
It was
nuts. And so she did on internet, and from what she told me, it was around 2,300 miles.
And yours was how many again?
29.
Okay.
And so she did that in 47 and a half days. I did 2,900 miles.
Sorry, Casey. I'm just fucking around.
But the thing is, like, it's so different. You know, like, some things that would have worked for her weren't working for me, because it's such a unique experience, right? And so to each his own. And
what about her journey was different than yours, other than like the route?
The purpose.
Just the purpose.
The purpose.
And what did she
the
do?
The route.
For?
I you know? Can't remember. It's one of those things where I can't remember. I can't even remember a lot of things about my journey. It's crazy.
I was going to ask you, did you have a favorite part of the journey? What was your favorite place that you traveled through?
Yeah. So, favorite part, I don't think I have one necessarily. I have memories that I'm really cherishing, you know, like sunsets in Texas were insane. Like, but what was cool during this journey is that there were signs that were happening all along the way where I knew that there was no way I could fail. I mean, it never crossed my mind, but I felt so aligned because of the signs that were happening. You know,
what were some of those signs?
One of them, both my crew vehicles were broken down. And I had no idea. And I had no phone service. I was in the middle of the desert. And every time I had an impactful conversation with somebody, I would ask for their names. And it's like I carried them on my shoulder with me. And so when I would run into trouble, I'd look up in the sky and I'd be like, "Diz, help me out, guys." Like, I would scream their name out loud in the sky and I'd be like, "Guys, I need help. I need something. Like, I'm in a bad spot right now." So this one day, both the crew vehicles are broken down. I'm in the middle of the desert. I don't even know if I'm going the right way. I haven't seen a car in 6 hours and I have no more water. And so I'm like slowly passing out. I'm like, oh my God.
Did you have like a camelback?
Yeah, I had a camelback, but it was all empty. I was trying to like keep it for as long as I could. Yeah. And then all of a sudden there's nothing left. There's no shade, nothing. I haven't seen a car in 6 hours. Then I look up and I'm like, guys, like I need help. Something. Literally 15 seconds later, I hear a car. I turn around and I was like, huh? A car showed up and I was so in shock. I didn't even say anything. And they pulled over next to me, handed me two waters and two Gatorades. I grabbed them and I didn't even get to say thank you. They left. And wow. I was like, what? Yeah. And I took a sip and I was like, wait,
this is real?
What just happened? And it was always things like this where you're like, I could tell these stories to people and they'd be like, no way that happened. Or like, you're just like delirious. And I'm like, dude, like, it literally happened to me. And repeatedly, like if it happens once, you're like, okay, coincidence. But it would happen like every day. And then something I realized is that everything that you speak into, like if everything that you speak out loud becomes your existence, becomes your reality. And so on the road, it was, man, it's so hot out. I wish it was raining. I couldn't say things like this because the next day you'd know that I had to have heavy rain for 3 weeks.
Fucking powerful.
If I was like, man, you know what? Like, the pavement's been so great.
Yeah, it's nice and smooth.
Boom. Next day I'm like walking in gravel for 12 miles with my skates on. Because my thing was I'm going to skate every single mile. Like my skates never came off.
You're not walking at all.
I am not taking my skates off at all. Like, that was the one thing. I was like, I don't care if I have to swim with my skates on. They're not coming off. And so I found myself getting stuck sometimes in Missouri, especially in gravel on farm roads. And
fucking Missouri.
right?
Or you get going really fast and you hit a piece of gravel. I'm sure that happened.
Yeah. I fell three times in my journey. Three times. The first fall was the worst one. Another one.
You told us about?
Yeah. Then the other second one was pretty bad because I fell on the shoulder on the highway. And this was like the line. This is the shoulder. This is the white line. And this is traffic. I fell down with my hand on the line like this. And there's a semi truck that drove like right next to me at the same time. Like I could literally, if I went like this, I had no more finger. Like, and so I'm laying down like, and I look. And as soon as I look, I was like, whoa, that was close. And then another time I was on the shoulder. It was also in Missouri. Skating there, and I see like the entrance of a farm road off the highway, and I see this huge patch of gravel. I'm cooking like 35 miles an hour, and I look, and there's one car coming, and I'm like, sure enough, he's gonna move over so I can move in the lane. No, he didn't. He didn't move over. So I was like, do I get hit by a car or do I try the gravel road? Well, gravel road it is, and sure enough, my skates just stop. And I just go flying forward and a piece of my hand fell off. It was disgusting. I was like, come on. And you feel, it's so draining when you fall.
For
but
sure.
Then you like get so mad that like,
fuck.
Yeah. Because like, oh. It happens so fast.
For sure. Know? Nothing you can do about it. It's either get hit by a car or wipe out.
So you get up and you're like, well, shit, here we go. It's part of it. And then you feel kind of gangster. So like, it's good. You know,
yeah,
it's good
you're momentum. Bleeding, you're like,
but
fuck
you. Like, but. Yeah, all these signs.
Man, only three times. I mean, that's
three times on 3,000 miles.
I was gonna say, bro, that's not. I was expecting you to say way more than that. So you're obviously a very good skater.
Well, but the pavement, back to what you were saying earlier, was nuts. I mean, I did a lot of Route 66, and that thing is so old, and the vibrations.
Oh, dude, I'm sure your feet just vibrating. Because I mean, I played a lot of like roller hockey growing up. I skateboarded a lot. I remember on days where I'd be doing that a lot. I remember like the end of the day, like my feet just vibrating or like feeling like they're vibrating. So,
and then with
take
the nerve
that,
and everything.
Yeah, take like, that to a fucking 20 or million times what you did is every day for 45 days is insane. Dude, this is wild. Holy shit, dude.
It's incredible.
So cool.
Appreciate that. Yeah, it was, but again, if I could start again, I would start tomorrow.
You'd do it again.
Oh my God.
I bet you feel like you could do anything.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing. This is the question now is like, will it ever be enough? What's
like, how do you top
like
that?
What's next?
Because the thing I was really scared to talk about during it, and I really wanted to talk about my crew members, but again, when you speak, you have to be careful and really watch your words. And that's something that I realize in life, we talk to fill a lot of space, and we don't even realize that it becomes our existence and our reality. And so for me, it was like, I haven't really reached my physical limit doing this, and I knew that as it was happening. It was harder mentally than physically. So now I'm like, well, what, how can I find that, you know? And it got to a point where I considered getting to Times Square and turning back to go back to LA. The problem was we didn't have the funds and I didn't have the time with hockey starting back up. But that question would haunt me every day, like, should I just go back? Should I just send it back? Should I do it? Should I do it? Should I do it? And it didn't make sense at that time with the funds. But it's something that crossed my mind every day. And then the finish line was very interesting for me because...
Yeah, tell me about, like, how did that feel pulling into Times Square? Was there, like, a part that you saw in your head as, like, all right, once I touch that or once I skate over that, that's it? Or is it, like, what was that like?
Yeah, so first form always talks about loyalty, right? And so for me... I arrived in New York 5 p.m. But I was wearing my rollerblade suit.
Okay.
And I went to wear my first form one. So I knew I was going to get the record at that point. I was really proud and I was really happy. But there's no way in hell that I would have crossed with not something else than my, sorry, rollerblades, not against you. But I wanted my first form one because I was attached to it. That's when I took my first fall in it. And that's... It was very special. And so my crew had to drive to the hotel and then get stuck in New York traffic. Took him 6 hours. They brought it back to me. I changed on the street. Then they had to go to the finish line and they got set up. They rallied some people. They put the finish line. They were holding it. And then I'm just getting to New York. And I'm like trying to comprehend what happened. Because when you travel, I always say this, when you travel, you're in a car, in an airplane or on a train or a bus. But when you go this far on your 2 feet, like it, your brain doesn't register that. I can quantify a marathon. I can envision a 10K, a 5K, but how do you understand 3,000 miles? You don't. All of a sudden, I'm in the desert, in the mountains, and then boom, I'm in Times Square with all these lights. So I get there, cross the finish line, and very happy, very excited. I'm like relieved because I'm like, well, I said I was going to do it. I did it. But my very first thought when that little band hit my stomach was, shit, what do I do now?
Yeah.
Like, who am I now? Like, what's next? And so I got to talk with Iron Cowboy. I got to talk with like a lot of people like that. And they were always like, oh, just be prepared for after. Now, everybody's experience is different, but they told me that. And I wish I was more prepared for afterwards. And even if I was, I don't think you can ever be ready. It's just something you have to go through. But it was really hard. My whole life fell apart like within 2 weeks after ending the journey. And it was really confusing because you do something for a great cause, for people to be happy, to find, you know, peace and stuff. And you're like, well, why is my life going? My visa was expiring. My school failed me on my, because as I was getting across America, I was writing papers about it for an internship. They failed me on that. They took my financial aid away. My hockey coach said he wasn't keeping me, even though he recruited me. So it's like, go from like this high that you're supposed to celebrate to back to reality, because you're away from 45 days, but your responsibilities and everything else isn't.
Right.
And all hit me at once. I couldn't stay in the U.S. because I couldn't afford to be in the U.S. I couldn't afford my apartment. And then I get a phone call and they're like, hey, you want to play hockey in Sweden? Yeah. Mm. I will pack your bags. We need you here in 2 days. And I just left. Okay. 2 weeks after.
Right after this. So how wrecked was your body? Like, yeah. What was the recovery like?
Well, actually, like my body. So I took 2 weeks off and then I started school again a little bit. And then
in Sweden? I
messed up the time. So I finished my journey. In a matter of 2 weeks, everything fell apart.
So you finished your journey, you're back in Springfield.
We drove back to Springfield, went to Florida for a couple of days, but
got it.
Everything fell apart and then got back into school. My hockey coach wasn't taking me on the team. And then I just started training to go to tryouts. So I took 2 weeks off, started training again. And my body was actually fine. It was weird. Like, I mean, I was super skinny. I was beat. But at the same time, like, it's like, how worse can it get, you know?
Yeah, you're probably like, I mean, what else?
The swelling went down. Like, you couldn't tell a difference between my knee and my ankle. It was just like one straight line.
Oh, wow.
And then my arms were about this big because you don't use your upper body for 45 days. And yeah, just started building my body. It was fine. I have a little back issues now. Probably didn't help. Like, it's probably not that great for you to skate 3,000 miles, but who cares, you know? Right. That's how I go.
Right. But I remember that one after hockey games, my lower back hurt and a little bit. So, I mean, I would imagine that's just to the millionth scale with what
Yeah, and so, like, for now, you know, with playing hockey, like, I finished my season this year with, I mean, I have two vertebrae that are fused, the very bottom ones. I have discopathies, and then I have a sports hernia. I had tears in my abs, but it probably all comes down from my back because you overcompensate and like tearing my groin, my hip.
And this is all from the
Well, it's like afterward, I'm assuming like it started from this.
From the journey across America.
We didn't have the budget to have a doctor or anybody with us. It was just like my crew members.
Yeah, you didn't exactly have an MRI probably right before to see what everything was before and after, you know.
Yeah. You know, it was just broke college student with an idea.
Yeah,
and that's what makes the story is like people don't realize the conditions that we were in and like how we did it.
Yeah.
Like,
now they were filming the whole time, right?
We filmed the preparation, we filmed the whole journey, and we filmed a little bit after. Now we're in the editing process. It should be done in July for our team to watch and send our notes back to the editor. Then it's going to be submitted to movie festivals. And then January to May next year, we're going to attend the festivals that picked us up, hopefully receive awards for it. And then we're hoping to do our very first theatrical release here in St. Louis from now after Summer Smash.
Oh, hell yeah.
Awesome. And then we're going to go on tour and then we're going to distribute it to streaming platforms, Netflix, Amazon, Apple TV.
Dude, that's incredible.
So, but again, now it's all out of my hands. I told my producer, Ryan, I'm like, hey, man, did my job, ice skated. And then make I fully trust good. Him. I mean, yeah. You know, they were part of it to have producers on the journey. Like they were invested. They didn't just like believe in it.
They were there every day. Yeah.
Now, the whole time you were skating, was somebody there filming with you the entire?
No. So they would like drive by, like, you know, sometimes they'd follow me on the bikes. They would
pick and
have the drone. Yeah. There was a shot list of things to get, interviews to get, moments to get. I mean, it sometimes should hit the fan too. I mean, we were complete strangers other than my brother and I. Like we didn't know each other. And all of a sudden you're living in an RV that has one bedroom where I'm sleeping. And then they're all like sleeping on couches in a bunk bed. It was cool for me to see complete strangers come together for a cause that was very special for me. And that meant everything. And, you know, over the years to see like the people that believed in it, the people that got something out of it, it was changed my life. It's hard to put words on it. You know, like I've had people like that lady that loses her skin when she puts her shoes on was like, well, Louis, like seeing that you're a professional athlete and that you're about to do this makes me believe that one day I'll be able to run again because I'm a runner. I saw after my worst day of skating, I only skated 29 miles. Walk in this hotel lobby and this lady's like, Louis, she didn't call me. She's like, well, what are you doing? Like, why are you wearing this skating suit? And
so what's a skating suit exactly?
It's like a cyclist outfit. Like a
skin tight.
Yeah.
Kind of
It was like the triathlon thing. Got it. Basically. And so she's like, oh, you look funny. Like, what do you do? And so I tell her what I'm doing and why. And she looks at me. She starts crying. I'm like, did I say anything wrong right now? Like, I'm like, it's been a long day, but I don't think I said anything wrong.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, my son has a really rare skin condition that really resembles what you have. And seeing that you turn what happened to you into this and what you're doing makes me believe that my son's going to grow up to be a strong man one day. And it's like double jab uppercut straight to the face.
Yeah.
Like, it hits you like a train, but like these things kept happening over and over and over again. You can't just ignore those things. Like they just hit you. And every time I'd have a conversation like this or a sign like that, I just knew. Confirmed everything I was doing. I was exactly right where I was supposed to be.
Well, now are you prepared for what's to come? Because I have a feeling that's going to get amplified once this movie's done. Are you kind of prepared yourself to like that's, what that's going to look like?
That's something I think about very often. I'm trying to build my brand more. But I'm so excited. I'm so impatient. It's been 2 years now. You know, like the anniversary for the 2 year mark of my start was just 2 days ago. June 1st.
It's awesome that we're able to have you on here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great time to really just think about all that. And, you know, we don't realize how long it takes to put a film together, a documentary together. And for me, I had to learn the hard way. You know, I have to wait, but it's got to be done right. And so I'm trying to prepare for what it could be like for me after this all comes out. But I don't think I quite understand.
What is it that you're hoping comes from up?
I just want people to take action on their dreams and their goals and to stop listening to like what society tells you you should be doing. This was a thought. This was a shower thought. I turned into my reality because I understood that's what I was meant to do. It happened to be skating for a greater cause, but because skating is what I do. But whatever it is that you do, I want people to see it and be like, you know what? I can do something special with the talents I have, with like the person I am. It doesn't need to skate 3,000 miles. It starts with being a good person, like saying hi to somebody at the grocery store, like helping an older lady cross the street. You know, when I was stuck on my journey in those gravel roads, I was looking for hard times, for hardships throughout my journey to make them more meaningful and to understand what was happening. So when I was stuck on that gravel road for 12 miles walking in my skates, which is like walking like with ski boots. I mean, yeah, you guys know.
For sure.
I was like, why is this happening to me? What am I supposed to be doing in this moment? Why am I slowed down right now? And then I realized there was a lot of trash on the side of the road and I could never pick it up because I was going too fast. But I'm like, hey, I'm stuck right now for a reason. Why don't I you know, make something out of this. So I was like, well, I can pick this piece of trash and this one. And I was so focused on picking up that piece of trash that I forgot the hardship I was going through of walking. And I was actually turning this into something positive. And over the course of like 12 miles, we filled out our whole minivan of trash in like trash bags. And then that's when it hit me. I was like, well, good. Like, my situation sucks right now, but it's great. Like, awesome. Because you know what? This is only a matter of time. And I kept saying, this too shall pass. It's all temporary. And when I would look at a mountain for days, sometimes leading up to it, I'm like, this is waiting for me. I'm going to have to climb over that. Well, it's there. So I can either just like beat myself up over it or just understand that, hey, it's going to be one step at a time. And before I know it, I'll be over it. And on the other side of that, there could be anything. Now, do I think there's going to be another mountain, or do I picture that there's going to be a giant downhill and like perfect pavement? Well, you really speak anything into existence. And so every time I would go through something hard and it'd be like, good, yeah, because good. It can only get better. And right. When I was at the top, I was like, make sure you embrace it because it's not going to last.
It's like that Jocko Good video.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. exactly that.
Good.
Good. Good. Good.
Didn't get the new high speed gear we wanted. Good. Were our bullets good? Didn't get promoted.
Good.
Rolling without your mouth guard. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like not being called a first form athlete for 2 years. Yeah. Good. Because people like my producer saw how invested I was with this.
Yeah.
And he was like, Louis, like as a friend, I'm telling you this as a friend, like stop. Like you're killing yourself, dude. And I truly was pulling the hair off my head. He's like, dude, like just let it go. Like you need to respect yourself and like just be you.
So when did
You wouldn't be you if you're not continuing to move forward, right?
No. And so I was like, Ryan, I understand and I appreciate that you're looking after me in this sense. Like I truly do, you know. And it takes special people sometimes to like tell you these things. But these conversations again ignited that fire of being like, I know I'm supposed to be doing that. And so this is a really cool story. I over the course of becoming first home athlete, I had made like really meaningful things for Andy and Scott and Chris and Sal. Like after my journey, I still hadn't heard anything.
So you were not an athlete before the
journey. So they helped me out with supplements. They're like, Louis, what you're doing is awesome. We believe in you. They sent me all the supplements I needed for the whole trip.
Cool.
Which was crazy. Like I remember getting that order at my producer's apartment in LA, and supplements took a bigger spot in our van than my clothes did or anybody else's clothes did. Like our RV was packed. I was surrounded by protein tubs. It was so cool. And so when I skated through here, because I skated right through Fenton, right by HQ, all the way to Dupo, Illinois. And so, I had met Andy in person, but I hadn't met Sal. And I remember I'm out there and I'm like, oh shit, Sal. He was on a ruck. And I went up to him, I'm like, Sal, I'm Louis Schick.
You're
like,
on your blades?
I was on my blades. I was we were driving up for me to start the day from where I stopped.
So every day like you drive back
to. And then I was like, you know what, let's just drive by HQ. Like real quick. We just stopped at Wally's and then let's drive by HQ as we like go drop me off for the day while I stopped the night before so I can like get some inspiration and get ready to go. And we drive by and I see Sal out there. I'm like, oh my God, Sal's here.
Mm.
So I jump out of the van. The van was still rolling. I jumped out and I'm like, Sal, I'm Louis Shakes. He's like, wait, oh no, I know. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, you're the dude who's skating across America right now, aren't you? I'm like, yeah. And then we talked for a little bit. And then I was so out of it and so confused about what was happening to me. I'm like, well, Sal, I'll see you once I set the world record. And he's like, okay. And then in my mind, I'm like, shit, dude, what the fuck did you just say?
Yeah.
You're trying to become a first form athlete. You meet Sal, and now you're telling him you're going to set the world. I'm only halfway at this point.
You did it the right way, though, man. I'm sorry. You did it the right way. You saw the opportunity to say, I'm going to go do the thing.
And then you did the thing.
Sal and Andy have riffed on this a million times, and it's very important because when you're an influencer of their stature, which regardless of being entrepreneurs and, you know, presidents and CEOs, they're still influencers. It just is what it is. You always have people coming up to you saying, like, I'm going to do X. Andy's favorite two words, show me.
Missouri's so the show me state, baby. Yeah,
that's right.
Unless you go to Missouri, like, unless you go to like fucking Springfield, and then they have these things that say it's the cave state. It's like, no, it's the show me state. You're fucking stupid. And you did it. You just showed them.
And yeah, it all happened. So after my journey, I didn't hear anything. Like, I got a comment from Sal on my post, like, congrats, man. It's awesome. Like, first form, like, my thing. And I'm like,
is that it?
I was like, so, like, you guys want to talk? Or, like,
my people call your people?
I'm like, what do we do here? And I was really confused. I'm like, what else could I possibly do?
Right.
You know, like, I live by this. I live the mission, but I couldn't just stop there. And so we came back here to Fenton for a little while before I went back to Mo State. And when I was sick, I asked for a music box. And the very first one that my mom bought me had a mirror on it. And the doctor was like, ma'am, I'm sorry, you cannot give this to him. He can't see himself. So then she bought me another one that didn't have a mirror. And so the one with the mirror, we always had it. And so I had my mom ship it to me because at the time, after I finished my journey, Sal was always posting about looking at yourself in the mirror when you're going through a hard patch, like being honest with yourself, like, but overcoming that and knowing that what's on the other side of the hard time that you're going through, you know, is worth it. And so I wrote a letter to Sal and I was like, Sal, you know, like just basically telling him, like, I know I belong here. I know I need to be a part of this. I live that way. You guys understand it. I understand it. There's a certain standard that's set. And I just want to be a part of this all. And here's a music box. It's very special to me. And I wrote a message about that and stuff. And I gave him that music box, that first one I couldn't receive. And then I was like, you know what? After that, I left it up to the universe. I was like, I know I've done everything I could. That's it. So I moved to Sweden for hockey. And I'm like, well, now I'm moving to Europe. It's surely not going to happen. Like, I'm not going to be a first form athlete, at least not now. And a week later, it's a day after my birthday, a day before my mother's birthday. And I'm living literally in a closet. Like, my bedroom is smaller than this table. I can't even stand up in my room.
In Sweden?
Yeah. In the apartment I was in, we were three people in a one-person apartment with my teammates, and I had the closet, the tiny closet. So I can say I came out the closet every morning. But I'm kidding. But it's like 4 a.m. and my phone starts ringing. And you know, there's this first form lovers page sometimes, like the scam or whatever.
Sure.
And I see, and I'm like, oh, great. And my phone got hacked. I'm like half asleep. I'm trying to sort out what's going on. And I see the first form tagged you in the video. I'm like, huh? And then I see Sal speaking. I'm like, well, if this is fake, it's pretty good because Sal looks pretty real in that video.
AI wasn't really a thing yet.
Yeah. And he's like, well, our two new first form athletes, Bailey Behrens and Louis Shakes. And I was like, huh?
No heads up, huh?
Yeah, nobody knew. All my friends at HQ, no one knew. Like, nobody had an idea.
That's the thing about first form. Anything surprise.
Dude.
Do not ruin the fucking surprise.
Nobody knew. No, my closest friends had no idea. And I kick my door open. I wake up by my wrist. I'm like, let's fucking go. I'm a first form athlete. And then I like went for a run. I don't even think I had shoes or a shirt on. I ran a 5K. I was just screaming. And I'm like, let's go. It's the middle of like October at night in Sweden.
Fuck. Dude.
And
I so
came
cool.
back and I had Nick Clements on the phone that night. I called my parents and I woke up the next morning and I freaked out because I'm like, shit, did it actually happen?
Oh, yeah, did I dream
and grabbed my phone. I'm like, oh, wait, actually, what? And it was hard because I couldn't be here until like March because I was fortunate enough to be invited to go to the Missouri State Hall of Fame introduction. And they like put me in there for my accomplishment, which was really
That's
special.
Awesome.
It was really, really cool. And while I was invited for this, I came and stopped by first form for the first time months after becoming an athlete. And it was changed my life. It really did, and it was also cool because it was a goal within another goal, you know, and to see that it all started being a customer of one protein tub, you know, that one thing just like led to so much more in friendships. And I mean, I wouldn't be sitting here right now if it wasn't for first form or like my journey, you know.
That
like,
damn CTC.
Dude, you know, I look at it every day in the gym. Like, dude, if only you knew what you did for me.
Should I go grab my tub real quick?
And it was cool because over the years I ran into all the people I met, you know, and Dayton in Springfield at S2 and all his team. Like, I went back there and I was like, guys, like this is all thanks to you. You know, Josh was also there. I mean, all these guys, I can't forget them, and it's pretty special to, you know, build relationships like that and feel understood too. I'm sure you guys can relate to this, but when you're living a certain way, chasing certain goals, it gets very lonely. And for me, it's hard to explain 75 hard to somebody, it's hard to, you know, explain why you should like eat right or hold a certain standard for yourself and the things that you do. Some people don't want to understand and actually just can't. And I really found myself within that company, within that community. And I'm like, wow, it's crazy because just a couple of weeks ago, Nate, my buddy that works at First Form, I'm staying with right now, was like, we're driving to work. And I look at him like, why does Fenton feel more like home to me than France does? It's crazy. And, you know, I was like, well, just a special place. So always feels good to come back for sure.
Oh, we love having you.
Yeah, definitely. Well, definitely a true inspiration for a lot of people, man. You got an incredible story. Thanks for sharing it with us too.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Yeah, what can we do to support your cause or your mission? And
yeah, well, right now it's you know, people learning about the disease is huge. If I can go to bed and I talk to one more person about it, SJSTN can happen to anyone, especially because of medication. You know, everybody takes medication, and I guarantee if you go look in your medication cabinet right now and you look on the back, it might say may cause SJSTN. So just being aware of that, it's very preventable. It doesn't need to go as bad as it did for me. If it's recognized early on, you know, you have your survival rates are through the roof. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the main thing. Social media platforms is where I share all my story, you know, Instagram, everything. I, you know, try to help people out there, show them that anything's possible. I truly believe that. And, if there's investors or sponsors that want to get involved with our documentary, they can contact me. You know, we're looking for investors or sponsors for the future events that we will have or for the editing of the documentary. There's lots of opportunities. And also anybody who feels like donating for the cause and for research, can really make a change, because it's definitely a field that needs a lot of help. You know, like at the end of the day, research needs money, needs funds. It's like, so if anybody's wants to make a difference in that sense, then you can also contact me and I'll put you in touch with the right person. But yeah, so I think that's how you can support me.
Perfect. And what's your Instagram handle?
It's at Louis Shakes, LOUISCHAIX.
Is there one platform that you focus on more than another?
Instagram, yeah. Instagram is where I'm at. Really, I try to be on TikTok, but I don't quite understand TikTok. Yeah. So I just do Instagram, and it automatically posts on Facebook. And all my social media platforms are the same handle, so it's pretty easy.
Gotcha. Well, we usually finish this with one more surprise question. I think we both can kind of have an idea of what you're going to say. We call it the tombstone game. So here lies Louis Shakes. What's it say on your tombstone?
Can I guess?
You can guess.
Make St. Louis French again.
Yeah, that'll be like the PS. I would say it's my favorite quote. It's something I've taken with me all my life, and it says, "I am the master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul."
Perfect.
You know,
Invictus. Awesome.
Perfect. Invictus by William Ernest Henley, and also a great movie with Morgan Freeman.
English major, yeah. You can't get that shit by me, dog.
Come on now. Yeah, I'm actually surprised you know this one, because you're the first person who's ever told me about it.
No, I've heard that Morgan Freeman like scene too. And mm-hmm. Do you remember, she used to be a First Form, an amazing athlete, an amazing trainer. Do you remember Marissa Dvorak?
Mm-mm.
She had a tattoo on her chest right above her shoulder. So I realized those are the same thing. And yeah, I can throw it in here at the episode. If we don't get copyrighted, I will.
Awesome, guys. Well, Louis, thank you so much for your time today.
Appreciate you.
Your story is incredible. Let us know. We would love to support any way that we can. To everybody that was listening, please hit that subscribe button for us so that you're notified when the next episodes come out. Hit that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.